This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
From what I understand, there's some talk on the street about Prop 13 as it relates to commercial property.
Yep.
And this has always been my one big nightmare. Janice and I have had this discussion several times. She's always been of the opinion, well, hell, it was voted in by the voters. I said, yeah, what's voted in by the voters can just be as easily voted out by the voters if you have enough of the right kind of voters. Well, right now, with the political sway we have in our state, it wouldn't be difficult to vote out Prop 13, and they want to start at the commercial level, from what I heard. Now, have you heard anything about that?
Yeah, we're fully expecting in 2020 for them to try the proposition split between commercial and residential, and we think it's going to pass. We're just assuming it's going to pass.
Well, that's going to kill commercial real estate.
Yep. Yeah, we don't disagree, and we think it's sort of the path to get rid of Proposition 13 altogether. Yeah, it's been on our radar for a while, and it's something that we're definitely watching because we think it's going to impact a lot of our investors. It impacts our family, anybody who owns commercial. So, yeah, it's definitely a possibility.
Hey, would you save some of your properties over in Florida for Janice and me?
Well, we continue to build, so we're creating them all the time. All right. No, this is great. I know this is nerdy, and this might be excessive, but going through these is helpful and me being able to ask some questions. So SB 13 was pushed by Senator Witkowski. He was on the radio show. He has been such a great resource. So this further talked about the cities have 60 days to pass a permit. The total floor area of an attached ADU is limited to 50% of existing structure or 1,200 square feet for a detached. So these can get big. What's the biggest ADU you've seen?
Oh, well, 1,200. I mean, that's about it right now. Although there's one right down the street from me that sure looks a lot bigger than 1,200.
It's an ADU with an illegal addition already?
Well, it's been there for 30 years. I mean, yeah, you know, I've been in my home for 40, and we're kind of out in a semi-rural area of North San Diego County, and it's almost like one of those areas where it's no Brentwood, you know.
Right.
There's no CC&Rs, and it's a little neighborhood where, although we love it, it's quaint. We'll never leave. Love the neighbors and everything, but I mean, you're driving up the street and you're seeing these guys with their motorhomes parked in their properties, and I mean, it's that kind of a deal. So it's more of one of those anything goes type of neighborhoods. And there's this it's a nice home, the primary residence, but then probably 25 or 30 years ago, he threw up it was a mobile home. It was a great big mobile home, probably looks like about a 1,450 square foot mobile home.
Oh, big. Well,
and it's been there forever. And I mean, it's still there to this day. I don't know how he did it. That was back in the day when it cost you $50,000 to get a permit for an ADU from the county.
Well, and this is a good question for you then, because one of SB 13, it spells that no impact fees are allowed for units smaller than 750 square feet. And when it's over that amount, the percentage is based on size. So permit fees,
right,
are impact fees and permit fees. Are those the same thing?
Well, not really. An impact fee has more to do with your traffic and things, developmental impact,
schools, all that kind of stuff.
Well, schools, that's kind of a separate entity within itself, but yes, schools definitely are not exempt from any of these laws. I mean, schools still have the right to impose their fees on any kind of development, so a lot of that is still going to be there. But by and large, at least in San Diego, from what I've seen, they're, you know, complying pretty much countywide. Almost every single one of the jurisdictions are coming into some form of compliance, and they're all waiting these new laws to be implemented, as are guys like me who are trying to put these things on people's property.
Well, and the good thing too is that one of the laws that we'll get to, it's AB 671, specifically spells out that ADUs and JADUs count against a city's RHNA or affordable housing goals, which I think there's only six cities in the entirety in California that are on track. So we're all so far behind. And those RHNA goals are tied to other funding specific for the city. So I fully expect the state to start playing games with people's money. That's when things will really happen. So good to know, though, when it comes to impact fees and permit fees, those are different. So that's good to know. And then utilities can require a new construction and connection fee, but it has to be reasonable. That seems a little bit too vague for my taste, but I guess.
Well, I got a different read on that. As I understand it, if you're pulling the utilities from your own grid, there are no allowable connection fees. If you have to pull from the jurisdiction's grid, then there will be meter and connection fees.
Yeah, and my note, it says utility can require a new connection and fees, but it's got to be commensurate with price. It can't be the full whatever. So
it's got to be proportionate to the square footage of the ADU.
Well, and this is a good time for me to ask this question. When it comes to utilities, how often is it that, let's do electric, or more oftentimes than not, are you installing a new panel so it's completely separate?
Oh yeah, everybody wants a sub panel. Most of your property owners want a sub panel because they're going to use it as a rental,
right?
By and large, a good percentage of them. Or even if they're not, they still want to have kind of an idea of what that extra unit is costing them. So they tend to be putting up sub panels, and in many cases, you have to.
What about water?
If you don't have water, I'm not seeing that as much with water. You can pretty much tap in with water just about, from your own home. I mean, if you got to go out to the middle of the street and tap in from the city source, then that's a different story. Then you're going to be paying, you're going to be adhering to the city requirements for connection fees, et cetera.
Okay. Let's see. AB 881. Gas. What were you going to say?
Oh, I was going to say, yeah. Gas and sewer are kind of interesting.
Awesome.
That's all over the place. That's our biggest challenge right now, is trying to figure out how to get gas and water to the new site. Because you're dealing with a lot of old pipes and sewer lines. You could have clay or old cast iron steel, and then if you happen to go down and try to connect to something and you break it, then you're going down to the city to get a permit to replace it, and the city's going to say, "Well, geez, that's old. That needs to be taken clear back to the main line."
That's a real health and safety risk, so they could absolutely do that, and there's
absolutely
really low, and those are not cheap.
They're deal breakers that can stop a project dead in its tracks.
Yep, agreed. Okay, that's really good to know. And another reason, like, I've seen investors do this, they're like, I just bought a house in Palm Springs, and if I rent every day for $300, I'm going to be making this amount. And then they learn all the rules, and they're like, oh no, it's not what I thought it was going to be. Man, if you don't do your homework, this could be really painful. So AB 881, this was interesting because it requires the cities to work with utilities to identify appropriate areas for ADUs. So some of the other bills that passed in October really had to do with the digitization and modernization of the state's databases of housing, land, identification of affordable housing sites, all that kind of stuff, so it's easier for them to see. So they're going to be spending some money over the next couple of years doing that, and I think this is really going to help because, it is what it is. If utilities can't reach and it's not appropriate to build ADUs in some spots, it would sure be nice to know that up front instead of having to do all this work by hand going down to planning and the utilities separately. But we're not there yet. So they're going to work on it.
No, we're not. It's all over the place. I got to tell you one more little interesting story.
Please.
The city of San Diego, I'll send you the article. The city of San Diego, after the first of the year, is going to be discussing the possibility and the viability of allowing tiny homes and or park models to be installed as ADUs.
Yep.
Now, the jury's still, and I know there are some other cities around the state and the country that are already doing that. But what I question is this. If you buy a park model for $35,000, can you hook that up like an RV with an RV stub out? Or do you have to go through the same procedures as you would by building a regular ground-up ADU in terms of all the utility requirements? Because here's what I see happening. A lot of people, a lot of properties have, especially in the county, have stub outs and what they call pedestals to accommodate RVs. So, and you don't have to have that connected to the city. Well, it's inadvertently connected to the city because the stub out is connected right into the sewer line.
Right.
But you can run an extension cord essentially, or add another circuit to your panel and throw in more juice to activate the electricity on the park model or the tiny home. So my question is this: if this all goes the way it could go, which means they say, okay, yeah, if you've got an existing park model or RV hookup, you're good to go. Well, that's going to send this ADU industry into a completely different direction altogether.
That is a good point. And if that's the case, and if it's mobile, I wonder if they'll allow it to count as affordable housing since it's not permanent. It's not like a permanent housing structure that stays there. So that'll be interesting
it's
to
not.
Watch. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I don't think it would be. No appraiser is going to factor that into the equation for sure.
Oh, yeah, you can. How do you? It's personal property. It would have to be a bill of sale.
Exactly.
Okay. That's good to know. Well, real quick, AB 587, it has to do with sale and separate conveyance of an ADU, and there's a very narrow exemption for affordable housing organizations and nonprofits to sell the ADU off on its own. I think this is going to happen rarely. We'll have to wait and see. AB 671 had to do with incentives. So the local governments are now being asked to actively promote affordable and creative accessory dwelling units. So it'll be interesting to see if the state puts some money behind it in some way, shape, or form. If cities are willing to do creative things, if maybe they'll provide extra funding in some way, I think it's possible. So they've been focusing a lot on the stick in the last couple of years. So let's see if they sort of throw some bones and do the carrot approach in the following couple of years to sort of smooth transition. Because I know from the planning people I know, they're not happy about it for sure.
Well, you know, on this 671, the thing that kind of stopped me dead in my tracks is this little sentence. The California Constitution requires the state to reimburse local agencies and school districts for certain costs mandated by the state. Statutory provisions establish procedures for making that reimbursement. Okay, here's the answer to that. This bill, 671, would provide that no reimbursement is required by this act for the specified reason.
Yikes. Well, that is one of my concerns is that, I mean, when you and I spoke in San Diego at the ADU panel, a builder came up to me afterwards and said, well, this is cute because my city that I'm building in is taking a year to get me through the permitting process. And so all of a sudden, you've got all these people rushing to get ADUs, and there's an expectation you get them through in 60 days. I know so many cities are struggling with budgetary issues, pensions. They can't hire more people. So how do they afford to do all this?
You know, that's a funny thing. I got to tell you something. A good buddy of mine summed it up perfectly. My wife and I are both Disneyland freaks, and she holds the annual passes she has for years, and she'd rather go to Disneyland than take a cruise, unless it's a Disney cruise. But he says, okay, imagine when the word gets out about fast passes. And I said, wait a minute, the word is already out about fast passes at Disneyland. you're already waiting in line in the fast pass line while the other people in the regular line are passing you by.
Exactly.
So bottom line, the so-called rapid permit process is just as clogged up as any other thing any of the other options that are available out there for going through the permit process. City of Escondido, our Encinitas case in point, they're right now struggling with this new law. There's the Prado program, the pre-approved design ADU program of theirs that has just hit the skids. They word is out, they may not even renew it.
Oh no!
For that very reason, there's already some dissension among the architects, the AIA, and other entities these two architects that got awarded this privilege, if you will, of using their design, have more or less created a little monopoly of their own within the city.
Oh no!
So there's some issues. Yeah, there's issues there. And the guy that's one of the main guys that I'm not going to mention his name, but was awarded the thing, isn't even sure he wants to continue doing them. But what happens is 9 out of 10 people do not want to use the design that the city has approved for the permit, the fast track permit process. They want to make modifications. The minute you make the slightest little modification on a pre-approved plan, guess what? You're going right back to the permit counter. You're going right back through plan check. You're going right back through the whole process. And now you're in line for 6 to 8 months. And the city of Encinitas, in many respects, and I'm a resident there. I love the city, but they, in many respects, have shot themselves in the foot. Man. And now they're in a quagmire.
That's sad to hear because, they were really at the forefront and really I felt like they were trying to thoughtfully approach this issue. If you're not familiar, Encinitas had plans designed and it was sort of like a pre-approved. If you just took their plans, you basically were same day ready to go. So it's interesting to hear that 9 out of 10 people want some changes, but it seems like that shouldn't be how many changes are going to be made? Is it substantial? Is it swapping out certain features? I feel like they can keep building and pricing the options.
Well, what is it? We run into it with mobile homes all the time. We have to make changes on mobile homes because you can't just punk those down on a lot. It's easy to say, but in all reality, what if that front door is facing the garbage can?
Okay, fair enough. That's true.
You know? And so, these are just little examples, but people want to change a door. They want to change where the entrance is. They want to put a doorway where a window is, or they want to make a double window out of where a door is. These are all structural changes, and that means going back to plan check, going back to the architect, having him redesign it, then taking that back to the architect, and now you're starting over. Now you're just regular plan check. Now you're back in line A instead of line B, which was the fast track line.
Man.
So, and now line B is so backed up with applications. And you, like you said, they don't have the employees to accommodate it. They're looking at 6 to 8, 9, 12 weeks to get permitted.
Wow. And I knew in LA, the last I checked, they had something like 2,500 ADU applications sitting on the utility desk. So it didn't even have anything to do with the city. It's gotten very political because the whole housing and homelessness have become such an issue. It makes the mayor look bad. And there's a lot of pressure and politics getting involved. So, maybe that's where we can hope the state's going to come in with the carrot and help in some way, shape, or form. Cause I just don't see how this is sustainable. It's great in theory. I just don't know how some of these things, it's just people. How do you get through the process fast?
We've been working with this now for 3 months. I'm sorry I interrupted you.
No, please.
You get a nerve. We've been working this for 3 years now, and it's still just as confusing today as it was when the first laws went into effect in 2017. If not even more so, because they're introducing even more laws, and you're talking about bureaucrats. You're talking about clerical folks that are sitting there having to figure all this stuff out, and in many respects, it's not fair to them to have all this stuff pushed on them that they have to assimilate and regurgitate to the folks, the thousands of folks that are down there at the permit counters trying to pull their permits.
Mm-hmm.
It's really a quagmire right now. I think the worst is yet to come, but I do think at some point they will start to get it figured out and it will be slowly assimilated into the mainstream. But I think we're a ways away from that. And I've been on hold. I've been on caution for the last 3 years with a lot of my clientele. Mm-hmm. For that main reason. I just don't want to push people into things that they're going to come back a year later and say, you know what? I could have saved myself an extra $50,000 if you hadn't have told me to pull my permits now.
Well, an investor that we know that was part of our original ADU chapter, Christy Sertwell, she's been building ADUs in Long Beach, and she shared this week with me that she the planning department showed up and basically told her, oh, by the way, these items have changed and it's costing you more. So after she's already done, she basically got a bill from the planning department because they updated fees and it wasn't a small amount. That's messed up. That shouldn't be allowed.
Yeah.
Wrapping it up, I'm curious, in your experience, how far can I go as an investor? I'm looking to buy a property, and in my mind, I'd like to build an ADU. Will the planning department allow me to come down if I'm very organized and I have a plan that I'd like to draw? Can they give me a rough yes or no at the counter?
It really depends on the jurisdiction.
Okay.
I find a lot of the jurisdictions very accommodating and very helpful. But I find a lot of them that are extremely ill-informed or just don't want to talk about it or just brush you off to the side and make you wait for a day or two before they can even get to you. Or maybe they don't even have anybody on the counter that has the answers for you. That's the big part. You know, we go down to the county several times a month to pull permits, and there's only one or two people down there that know how to deal with the type of permits we need to pull. And that's at the County of San Diego.
Okay.
And that's not for ADUs. That's for foundations for manufactured homes.
Wow.
So, not all things are to all people. And you may, it just depends on the jurisdiction, Aaron. I'm not trying to discourage you. I'd definitely go for it. I always encourage people to start out at the planning counter. That's the easiest way to do something. And even make it one step easier with a phone call before you even go down there.
There you go. Yeah,
talk to a planner.
I just want investors to do their homework especially before they buy a property, assuming they can do something. You just don't – just mitigate the risk by doing your homework. That's all. I had some really good questions from the property managers because, of course, in October, the rent control stuff went through as well. And the question was, can you have a rent control primary and the ADU, what does it fall underneath? So this is where I think it depends, and it's just my opinion. When you do a junior accessory dwelling unit, do you have to get a separate certificate of occupancy?
I believe you do. I mean, you're pulling a permit for an extra dwelling. I can ask my son. I don't do JADUs. Basically are just in the manufactured housing end of things, but ground up design build. But my son does do JADUs.
The only reason,
in fact, he did one on his own. Now that I think about it, he just rebuilt a home. He bought a piece of property and rebuilt it for their own primary residence. And he built within that everything but a kitchen on one of his levels, on his bottom level of his home.
Mm-hmm.
He built that out. It's about an 800 square foot JADU, but he intentionally didn't put a kitchen in it because he didn't want to have to go through that added permit process at that time. Now, he's going to do it eventually, but he didn't want it to kink his loan or any of the other things that he was going through with the permits or inspections or any of that kind of stuff. So he just left the kitchenette out of it just to be safe.
Okay.
So I think that what you're asking me, I do think that when he does go to finalize that and really officially turn it into a JEDU, then yes, he will have to have a CO.
Okay. Well, the bill specifically spells out obviously, if you have a primary that's over 15 years, it could possibly apply in single family residence realm if it's owned by a corporation, an LLC, where one of the members is a corporation or REIT. You fall under that category anyway. But on the accessory dwelling unit front, the bill specifically points out if there's been a certificate of occupancy within the last 15 years, you're exempt from the rules. What I don't like about junior accessory dwelling units, you're largely within the square footage of the existing property, which has existed for over 15 years. I just don't like the gray area. So I don't know if they're going to clarify.
What bill is that?
I don't have the bill off the top of my head, but it's the rent control bill that just passed in the state.
Oh, that, no, okay, darn, yeah, I wish I would have that up here.
Yeah,
no, that's a whole other conversation for another interview.
Yeah, and you know, if you own commercial, yes, it's going to apply to you. But you know, if you're looking to split up the square footage of the existing, I just don't know the logistics of how that works with if you're dividing a two bedroom, one bathroom into a, you know, two studios. Do you get a certificate of occupancy for the different ones, and will the city rope you into the rent control? I don't know. So please do your homework on that front. Work with the city to see what they're going to do. I would just hate to see anybody do something like that and get locked in somehow. I think, yeah, just do your homework. So.
Well, no, I'm glad you brought that up. That wasn't even on my radar, but thank you. I'm definitely going to be on top of that one.
Well, we're definitely going to continue this conversation, especially when 2020 rolls around. We'll have to have a few more out. I look forward to possibly doing some more work with you in February. I love this stuff. We've been funding ADUs as part of flips, as part of rentals, not as new construction, but we launched the second program because of all this research for investors that have existing rentals. So I'm excited about the opportunity. If you are looking for a very easy guide, John, you have a great ADU guide on your website. Where can they go to find that?
Oh, just crestbackyardhomes.com. And then on the right side of every page on the website, you'll see a little green tab that says ADU guide. And just punch on that tab and download the guide. Cost $14.95, but it'd be the best $14.95 you've ever spent. And there's a lot of other good information on our website as well. We're adding to it every day. There's some really good blogs on our website that you can read. We have a lot of different models, a lot of really good information. So take the time and kind of surf through that entire website, and it'll really help you a lot. And by the way, while you're talking about manufactured homes, did you realize I just got this information yesterday? I'll send you the letter. Manufactured homes are exempt from the solar requirements.
Oh,
that are going into effect.
I'm so glad you brought that up. I forgot to ask, but you're telling me that detached accessory dwelling units are not.
No, not detached accessory dwelling units. Manufactured.
No, I know. But if I do build a detached, does that fall under the new Title 24? I have to put in solar?
Yes.
Ugh, okay.
Yes. Title 25, fortunately, is the mandate that preempts Title 24. So that is the manufactured housing mandate, Title 25. So they are not under that auspices.
Do me a favor, those of you listening, go online, look up John Aronson and San Diego. He was in an article. What he is a beautiful ADU. It's ridiculous. How many square footage is that? The one that I got to see, is it 400?
Oh, 430 square feet.
It's stunning. It was featured in a San Diego newspaper. You just have to see pictures. I think a lot of people still think, you know, manufactured homes, they think the wobbly boxes of the 70s. It's a dirty word. We're not talking about mobile homes here. You have to see this thing to believe it. His daughter did the design on it, and it's stunning. So they've come a long way, but I'm glad you brought up the solar thing because that is definitely something I needed to know, and now I do.
Well, and we still are holding open houses by appointment for we only have two of our ADU models left out of, I think, five we had at the beginning of the year. We sold three of them. We're down to two. So come on down while we still got them around, and you're more than welcome to take a look at them. One's the two-story hybrid that I I think you went through, yes. Aaron, and the other one is the little one that you're talking about. In fact, that is number one off the Silver Crest Assembly Line. That is the first official accessory dwelling unit in California off the Silver Crest Manufactured Home Assembly Line.
Really?
And that, yep, and that little unit is available. Starting price on that is about $65,000. That does not include the delivery or the setup or any of the site work or utility connections or permitting. That is all something that you have to work out with your contractor. My son can help you do that. He does all of our construction and installation work. But I think by the time the dust all settles, for all the other work that's involved, you're probably doubling that price easily. So you're probably up around 125 to 150 grand by the time the dust all settles.
Well,
that's the sad reality of what it's costing to do these ADUs nowadays.
I think what's fun about working somebody like you, though, is that you don't care, because you can do either Title 24 or Title 25 stick-built versus manufactured. You're going to do what's best for the client based on timeline, budget, all that kind of good stuff. I don't think there's a lot of people, unfortunately, that do what you do. What markets do you serve?
Just San Diego, and we do a little bit in South Orange and Riverside counties.
Okay. Yeah, sorry, Temecula. Everybody. I keep sending people to you, and they're like, oh, he doesn't do this area, but he's still a great, you're still a great resource. Can you help people on the manufacturing front, even if, you know, I don't know?
Well, I can refer them to folks. If they're interested in going manufactured, I can definitely refer them to our manufacturer. The sales and marketing manager up at Silvercrest in Corona is a valuable resource. He can refer, you know, dealers that do represent other areas. And then Champion Homes, they're up in Northern Mid-California. They're the holding company there, you know, for Silvercrest. Silvercrest is a subsidiary of Champion Homes. Champion Homes is on the New York Stock Exchange. They've been around forever. They're a very reputable and very solid company.
Yeah, if you haven't taken the time to look at manufactured homes lately, I mean, they're stunning. And in some cases, the quality is better. Remember, these are being built in factories and workers are doing the same thing over and over again. It's in a controlled environment. So it's come a long way. The technology has come a long way. And I think you're going to start hearing a lot more about prefab manufacturing in the Title 24 space as well. There's a lot of conversation in the builder community that a lot of people aren't coming out of high school saying, hey, you know what, I should be in the contracting field and I should build houses. So you're going to be seeing a lot more conversations about interior builds with robotics. It's green, it's sustainable, all that kind of fun stuff. So I expect to see a lot more in that realm in the near future. But
and don't forget what you're working on right now, 3D.
I know. I don't think that's going to end up happening, but I am excited about the technology. And you've got a few different people working in the space, and then you've got companies like Amazon investing in the prefab space. So I think it's a race.
It is.
It's going to be interesting to watch. Well, John, one more time, the websites you'd like people to walk away with today?
CrestBackyardHomes.com.
Perfect. All right. Well,
and Aaron, don't you forget to put that black tie on. You're going to be our MC in February.
I'm here for it. Yeah. Keep is that with SDCIA?
SDCIA. Yep. It's February the 12th. No, I beg your pardon. It's February the 22nd. It's a Saturday. It's going to be all day from 9 to 4. We call it the 2020 ADU Summit and Expo. And we are going to have Senator Wykowski as our keynote speaker, along with Greg Nicholas, who's a senior housing analyst for HCD. These two gentlemen, I've worked with them before several times. They're very, very good in front of large crowds, and there will be a large crowd. As you know, Aaron, that the Scottish Rite Center can hold up to 1,000 people. We're also going to have a couple of mayors from the county of San Diego talking about some of the programs that they're coming out with for their constituents. And we're also going to have space available for any of the city planners to have little exhibit tables to basically answer questions for their constituents on how to work through the process of applying for permits, and maybe even some of the cities that have the pre-planned approvals going. There are other cities now besides Encinitas, including the county, that do have pre-planned approval programs. So it's getting more exciting by the day. There'll be a lot of exhibits down there, including myself. We'll have a little exhibit set up. We'll be able to answer questions for people on a one-on-one basis about manufactured homes. There'll be other contractors. There'll be lenders. There'll be appraisers. There'll be people to answer questions about your taxes. It's going to be an all-day event, and it's going to be on a Saturday, and we're anticipating beautiful San Diego weather. So, and there's room, plenty of parking.
That is, yes, Scottish Rite is always good for that. I usually only mark it down to the city level, but as we get closer with that, I will definitely get the word out in Southern California. I think it's something that people will want to attend, especially you're going to meet some of the legislators that have been working really hard to make this happen. And if you're working in cities that you think the city planning departments need to be invited, please help us spread the word. They'll hear some good case studies of how other cities are doing it. We need more planners to be aware of this kind of stuff. So I know it's on a Saturday, but maybe we can get them to come out. So, all right, John, thank you so much. And, I look forward to, seeing you soon in Riverside. And other than that, we'll see you in February.
The Norris Group originates and services loans in California and Florida under California DRE license 01219911, Florida mortgage lender license 1577, and NMLS license 1623669. For more information on hard money lending, go to thenorrisgroup.com and click the hard money tab.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.